This is Marginalia, a production of KMUW Wichita.
Marginalia. Notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to
the main topic in the margin of a book.
Clemency Burton Hill is an award-winning violinist and renowned classical music journalist who has written a book titled Year of Wonder, Classical Music to Enjoy Day by Day. Burton Hill believes that making time for engaged listening to one piece of classical music every day will bring on a healthier and happier mindset. Through this book, she created a 366-day field guide that she hopes will blow up classical music as an elitist genre. In this episode, KMUW's own Luann Stevens joined me in conversation with Clemency Burton Hill so she could help me pronounce the names of the composers. I'm Beth Golay, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation. First of all, this is Beth Golay, and in the studio with me is Luann Stevens. And Lou is my boss, but Lou is... Yeah, okay, this is going to sound bad, but she once called me lowbrow for not knowing who John Cage was.
Yeah.
And she knows more about music than anybody I know. And so I knew
And I did know such thing, by the way.
I knew she would enjoy talking to you. And if anything, she would help me with the pronunciations of all of the names because I am so bad.
But this is actually brilliant because this is a big part of my mission, which is it doesn't matter. Why would you know how to pronounce a whole load of names that you've come across before? And this idea that there's any shame to be associated with not knowing is a big part of what I'm trying to just break down all of those barriers. So actually, you've proved the point deliciously as to why the book is necessary in many ways. And certainly my approach, which is to say all are welcome. I don't care if you can't pronounce the surname of the composer. That's the whole, you know, that's incidental to what I'm really trying to do, which is just connect you to the actual music itself.
So just to
say, that's brilliant.
Thank you. So see, Lou, she calls me brilliant.
I call her brilliant all the time. Don't let her kid
no.
you.
I just wanted to set up the book for the listeners. So it's called Year of Wonder, Classical Music to Enjoy Day by Day. And so the whole premise of the book, the whole idea behind it is that music is something that can be enjoyed and experienced just a short time each day, and what can listeners get out of listening to a piece of classical music each day?
Well, I think the answers to that question are hopefully endless, because any given human at any given moment might take something different from a piece. And the idea is certainly not to prescribe a particular response or feeling. In fact, quite the opposite. I'm very aware that people are daunted for all sorts of legitimate reasons by the prospect of classical music. And when I say legitimate, I don't mean that it's right that they should feel daunted, but I completely understand why they might feel daunted, given there's so much cultural baggage that surrounds this art form. And what I really wanted to do was pull down those barriers and extend a hand and say, if you're human and you have ears and you're curious, then come on this incredible sonic journey with me, and we can take it slowly. We can do it day by day and a little piece of music every day of the year, and it's a gateway into what I hope people will come to understand is this extraordinary treasury of sonic wonders. But we've got to start somewhere, and I want to be your field guide, if you like, or your Sherpa through this mystical, magical terrain. And you know, I'm excited by the response that you might have to it on each given day.
So we're recording this on January 3rd, the third day of 2019. And so far I have, I've listened to each of the pieces every day. So also just so listeners have an idea of how the book is set up. So at the top of each page is the day of the year. And then you list the piece that we should listen to, but then you give an explanation about either the composer or about, I mean, I'm thinking yesterday, was it, Chopin? How do you say that,
yes.
Lou?
Exactly. Chopin, no doubt.
You could remind me, or Lou, you have the book. What was yesterday's piece? And it was more than just an exercise. It was, did he pay homage to, now I don't recall, Lou is holding the
Etude
book.
In C major?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm sorry, what did you ask?
Well, and maybe you can answer this, Clemency, but you were talking about how it's more, you gave a history of the piece and that it was more than just, a warm-up exercise. Is that right?
Exactly. So he wrote this, well, I describe it as a glittering little study, this etude in C major, Opus 10, number 1. And the idea was that it would be a means of developing the technique of piano students. And it demands these outlandishly wide stretches, especially for the right hand, that people of the 19th century, when Chopin was writing, would have considered very daring. But I wanted to make the point that it is so much more than just a glorified homework exercise, if you like. And he's really paying homage to two of his great heroes, Bach and Mozart, in what I think is a masterpiece of melodic inventiveness and harmonic richness. And the reason I chose this piece for the 2nd of January was because I think the second day of a new year can often be rather anticlimactic. And, you know, the first day of the year, even if we might be a bit, you know, sore-headed from carousing the night before, tends to be a day of, you know, great promise. And we think about resolutions and maybe revolutions that might ensue in the coming year. And I often find personally, anyway, that the 2nd of January can be a bit anticlimactic. And this piece is so effervescent and it's so enthralling and exhilarating, and for me it was the perfect sonic tonic, if you like, for the second day of January. And wherever possible in the book, I wanted there to be a compelling reason to be listening on that particular day. And that might mean that there's a date resonance, maybe the composer was born or died on that day, or maybe the piece was premiered on that day in history. But for the 2nd of January, it was much more of a mood thing. It was a kind of, you know, how do we feel when we wake up on the 2nd of January? We might just need this mood booster. And for me, the Chopin delivers that perfectly.
So how much time will it take for people who want to participate in this daily ritual? How much time will it take? Because like yesterday's, I believe the piece that I found was a little more than 2 minutes. But then, you know, I see that people can listen on Spotify because you have a playlist. I was, you know, before I saw that, I was just searching for the pieces online, and I found two different pianists who played yesterday's piece, and I listened to both of them, and it was just a little over 2 minutes each, plus reading the explanation. Are there any pieces in here that are longer? I mean, I'm sure there are, but what's like the longest piece in this book?
The longest piece is around 24 minutes, but that's very rare. Most of them can be listened to in a few minutes, probably ranging between, I think one of them is a minute and a half, but they probably range between about 3 minutes and maybe 8 to 10 minutes at the max. That tends to be the sort of longest length, because the last thing I wanted to do was make people feel guilty for another daily ritual that they've failed to do, whether it's, you know, I find, especially at the beginning of the year, there's all of this sense of, right, this year I'm going to wake up every morning and meditate, or I'm going to wake up every morning and do some yoga, or I'm going to do my exercise, or whatever it might be. And quite often by the end of the day, the guilt of the things that are piling up on my to-do list that are as yet undone can be a real burden. And the last thing I wanted to do was make anybody feel that this would be, you know, a burdensome thing in their day. The question of how long it would take really ranges on the day itself, but each piece is just a page in the book. There's nothing longer than that, and some of the entries are very short, so they can be read very quickly. And then it's wonderful, you did a bonus exercise, which was to listen to a second version of the piece. That's fantastic. But if you do follow along with the Spotify playlists that I curated, they're also on Apple Music, and you can easily find the music on any streaming platform of choice, then, you know, it would range from a couple of minutes to maybe slightly longer. But I'd love it if people then were so involved in the music that they might want to listen to a different interpretation, or perhaps with the algorithmic help of their streaming platform, they might find something else that they wanted to listen to. Or I've curated the playlists very much with the idea that you could listen to, you know, say all of January of an evening if you just wanted to go from one beautiful piece of music to the next. But you definitely don't have to. I love the idea of this being just a daily ritual that habituates you to something a bit more soulfully enriching than other things we might do. I love hearing from readers who say, you know, I've put the book next to my dishwasher, and every day, every evening, as I go to load the dishwasher, there it is, and I put the music on to play, and that's the thing that accompanies that particular ritual. Or, you know, every day I get on the subway on the way home from work, and instead of just diving straight into, you know, a social media scroll hole, I actually do my piece of music then, and that accompanies me on my way home. Or if you can find some sort of nourishing daily ritual, then that's fantastic. But similarly, you can, of course, enjoy the piece at any moment during the day, or indeed on any day of the year.
Well, and I like the idea that you can listen to all of January. So if anybody listens, like, you know, podcasts, they're not exactly heard on the day that they are published. Or, you know, some people might hear this on air tomorrow and think, oh, it's January 4th, I'm already behind. But, you know, it's nice to know that it's something that you can just listen to in an evening and get caught up. But it is nice to know that anybody who's listening to this in January or February, they can go out and find the book and listen to the music, and they're not behind.
Well, of course not. And whatever day you begin, that's the beginning of your year of wonder, and you can keep it rolling until the following year. It's
oh,
not
true.
As though there's a time stamp or a time limit on it. I think we all lead incredibly frenetic and busy modern lives. And as I say, not only do I not want to make people feel guilty for, you know, adding a burden to their to-do list that they can't manage, but I also actually think that ironically, the effect of listening to this music might ease some of the more, you know, pressing modern maladies that we all face, whether that's anxiety or stress or insomnia or just feeling very harried. There's an awful lot of scientific research out there that proves that music can have an extraordinarily beneficial effect on our brain chemistry. It can lower cortisol levels, it can lower adrenaline levels, but it can also energize and excite and enthrall. And for me, my main mission was to really open up the world of classical music that I feel so lucky to have had in my life all my life. In case there are pieces of music and composers that could really change your life. You know, this isn't about me saying, oh, you should know all these composers because if you don't know classical music, there's something to be ashamed of, or you're, you know, some kind of inferior citizen. I fervently do not believe that. And there are so many reasons why classical music is marginalized and why people might feel alienated from it. What I want to do is open up the genre so that people know that this music is theirs. And here's 366 works to start with. But, you know, there's a whole world of the music out there. And I want to empower people to start building their own relationships and their own tastes with the music, and to, you know, be empowered to know that their response to pieces is absolutely valid, irrespective of their background or their education or whether they know how to pronounce the composer or whether they understand the actual musicology. I feel like we've got very far away from the music itself, and that's what I want to connect people to.
So you had reasons for the different pieces and the days that they were, but one of the things I noticed was that this is not just the top 40 of classical music. I mean, there are some well-known pieces, but then there are some that are a lot more obscure. So what made you choose different pieces? Like, for example, you have Hymn to St. Cecilia, which is one of my favorites. I sang it in college. And so it's like, what was your thought process when you were picking the different pieces?
Well, you've picked up on Hymn to St. Cecilia. She was the patron saint of music, and her patron saint's day is the 22nd of November. And so I really wanted to feature her on that particular day. And as it happens, that's also the birth date of a composer called Benjamin Britten, who wrote a wonderful hymn for St. Cecilia. So that was an obvious one for November the 22nd, for example. I really wanted to give my readers and listeners a sense of the extraordinarily diverse sound worlds that are included within this genre that we rather unhelpfully label classical music. So I wanted there to be a real sense of music from very, very, very early on. You know, the date that we're talking is the 3rd of January, and the piece that I chose for that day is by one of my absolute heroes, or sheroes of music, which is Hildegard of Bingen. She was born around 1098, died in 1179, but then I also include composers who were born in the late 1980s, even 1990s, who are very much alive and well today, and you would call them millennials, and they are, you know, an incredibly exciting life force in the development of this art form, and then pretty much everyone else in between. And of course, I wanted to represent the titans of each period, you know, the famous, you know, if you like, the when you think of classical music, you probably think, if you think about anyone, you probably think of Mozart, perhaps Bach, maybe Beethoven at a stretch. an old dead white guy in a powdered wig from Germany or Austria in the 18th century is probably what springs to mind. And actually that's doing a real disservice to the myriad voices out there, including women, because don't fall off your chairs, there have been women throughout history who have composed extraordinary music. But some of the more neglected voices, some of the more neglected regions, you know, I was really intrigued to do some more research and get past just the kind of hegemony, if you like, of Western Europe in the 17th to 19th centuries and actually look beyond there and find people who were doing incredible things with this art form. So I wanted there to be a real spread and a real diversity. And as I say, a big part of my mission is to empower people to start developing their own tastes and their own responses. And to do that, I wanted to make sure that I was really giving a proper representation of all of the wonders that are out there. It was a very, very big exercise in, for those who know me, this was deeply ironic, but I did the first time I'd ever done this in my life, which is I made a spreadsheet. And in that spreadsheet, I sort of demarcated, right, genre, period, you know, big famous people from this era, less well-known people. You know, I also wanted to curate it, as I say, so that there, wherever possible, there was a meaningful reason to be listening on that particular day. And I also wanted it to work just as a playlist. So as a radio broadcaster, I spend a lot of my time just thinking about music that will enrich people's daily lives and what's going to follow what. And I wanted that to work as well, so that if you did just press play on, say, the January playlist, it wouldn't be a jarring thing to go from one piece to the next, but that it would kind of make sense as a narrative as well. So there were so many different competing considerations. It was quite the jigsaw puzzle to put it all together. And it was a lot of fun, but it was quite anxiety inducing as well, as I'd wake up in the middle of the night going, oh my goodness, I've forgotten to put that piece in. And oh my goodness, I can't squeeze that in as well. And how do I possibly decide which pieces of this composer I'm going to include? I can't just do 366 pieces of Bach for the year, you know. So it was a big mission to put it all together, but it was a great labor of love as well.
Well, I saw you had, you know, poor John Cage, who I pick on a lot. Not a piece that I know, by the way. But you also have one of the 12-tone guys, Berg. You have a piece by, and I don't know that piece either, actually. And so there's going to be a bit of a. It won't be an. All of it's not easy. Some of it's going to be like intriguing and curious. I would think.
Absolutely. And I know I feel that it was really important. I'm not writing a history of classical music, but I hope that if you do go through the year and you read the book, you'll have a good sense of how the history of music develops and how composers interact with each other in a dialogue across space and time, and how there are these sort of sonic winks and waves exchanged through the centuries. And I felt that it was important. This isn't really just a, 366 pieces of easy listening for the year.
Right.
But that said, I really wanted where there were composers whose work is a bit more unfamiliar or whose musical language is a bit more intellectually challenging, perhaps, I wanted to put that into context as well. And also to say, hey, I get it. You know, it's not that easy to listen to Arnold Schoenberg or Alban Berg if you've never heard it before, or Pierre Boulez. But these guys were such titans and they had such incredibly interesting ideas. You know, if you were doing the equivalent in visual art, you would not think about leaving out Picasso. And yet Picasso at the time was doing something that was just as radical as Alban Berg, who you mentioned. And so there are composers who definitely fall into the more, you know, I might say difficult category, but I hope that I'm setting up the piece with enough context and enough of a sort of friendly, you've got this, guys, I'm with you every step of the way, that it will hopefully let you listen in a way that doesn't feel too daunting and you can make up your own mind. And even if you don't love the piece straight away, then hopefully you'll be interested in the ideas and that will intrigue you sufficiently to have another listen and to perhaps think about where it differs from other things in the book that perhaps you found, you know, more immediately accessible or enjoyable. And I also want to make the point across the book of cross-referencing. So if you listen to a certain piece and there's a connection to another piece that turns up in the book, then I would make sure it was very easy to find that by referencing the date so that you could quickly flip through and see that piece, or you could find it again on the playlist, and that you can start to listen and compare and create that sense of context for yourselves.
So I noticed that there, the Year of Wonder surveys 366 pieces by 240 composers. I was going to ask if you had any favorites, but then I was struck by the 366 pieces, and I had to look. Oh, you did February 29th. And Lou, I can't pronounce this. I can pronounce the Kyrie, but who is on February 29th? We only get to listen to this person once every 4 years.
Well, it's a good question. I couldn't possibly leave out February the 29th because I didn't want to shortchange anyone who might be reading and doing Year of Wonder during a leap year, which obviously 2019 isn't. So this year we get a bonus on the 29th of February. And I wanted to celebrate a wonderful Italian opera composer, Gioachino Rossini, who wrote 39 operas and held illustrious posts all around Italy, and was also something of a shrewd businessman, which can't be said for a lot of classical composers, it's fair to say. So you get a bonus bit of Rossini in 2019, and then hopefully in future leap years, 29th of February takes its place, as it rightly should, in the calendar.
So do you have any favorites that you just really think that participants should not miss that day?
Oh, that's so hard to say, because this is very much, you know, a personal journey through this extraordinary musical terrain. But I would really hate anyone to miss any day, because what if that was the day that turned out to be their favourite? So I would say that, wouldn't I? We started the year on the 1st of January with music by J.S. Bach. And like many, many, many people, Bach, for me, is the absolute godfather. And he is my greatest ally in my life, if you like. I've been lucky enough to play the violin all my life. And Bach's music has just been such a companion to me through my entire life and has seen me through all sorts of ups and downs. And what's interesting about Bach is that although he's often described as a sort of rather formal and complex and even mathematical composer, for me, what's extraordinary about his music is its ability to contain multitudes, to contain everything, if you like. And there's, in my opinion at least, there's never been a human thought or feeling or expression that isn't somehow found in Bach. So I really had to be disciplined about not just filling the book with Bach, but he's probably the composer that crops up the most. But one of the things I also really loved to do was to hopefully introduce people to, as you say, less well-known voices. Obviously, Bach is a very famous composer. But there are people like Elena Katz-Chernin, who comes later in the month, in January. I love her Unsent Love Letters. That's a really beautiful piece that it's always gratifying to me to hear from people the works that are most appealing to them as they go through the book. Or there's a contemporary composer called Max Richter, and looking at how he riffs on past music like the music of Vivaldi is incredibly inspiring to me, and I absolutely love the sound world that he creates. But honestly, there are 240 odd composers in the book, so hopefully there is really something for everyone. Let's pull up, for example, a piece by Vivaldi, who is a really famous composer, and pretty much everyone, even if they have only the most passing glimpse and passing acquaintance with classical music, will have heard his Four Seasons, because if they've ever been in a dentist's waiting room or held on a phone line or in an Italian restaurant, has probably heard the Four Seasons. And so I kind of complacently thought that I'd heard all of Vivaldi, because I've been steeped in music my whole life. And then comparatively recently, I stumbled across this incredibly beautiful piece from Andromeda Liberata, which was a sort of serenata, a sort of costumed concert opera that was designed to celebrate a very specific event. And it dated from the 18th of September, 1726. So I've stuck it in on the 18th of September. It's called Sovente il Sole, oftentimes the sun. And it's just an incredibly beautiful piece that I can't believe that I went through so much of my life not having in my life. And now I count it as just one of the absolute sort of musical touchstones that I need. There's a piece that comes up later this month on the 26th of January called Unsent Love Letters by an Australian composer, living contemporary composer called Elena Katz-Chernin. She was born in 1957. And this is her paying homage to one of her musical heroes, Erik Satie, who was a really eccentric but original and inventive French composer. And I absolutely love this piece because it's so much her own language, and yet it incorporates some of the, I suppose, magic of the Satie as well. And it doesn't matter if you don't know his music, but when you do and you can compare it to pieces of Satie that come up throughout the rest of the Year of Wonder as well, I think it just adds real richness. And this was based on the fact that after his death, quite some years after his death, a group of his friends finally got access to the apartment that he hadn't let anyone into for years and years. And they found all sorts of curiosities there, like two grand pianos that were placed one on top of the other, and seven velvet suits, and lots of umbrellas, and stacks upon stacks upon stacks of unsent love letters that he'd written to his muse and his lover and his neighbour, Suzanne Valadon, but he'd never sent them. And this is Elena Katz-Chernin's take on that, and I find it just incredibly moving and beautiful.
You know, I've turned to the 20th of September and I do not see Earth, Wind & Fire. Sorry.
I'm so sorry about that. What is on the 20th of September? Oh, Sibelius Violin Concerto, though. You can't complain.
No.
The most important thing for me is that this is really a book for any human. I think so often we have this image of classical music as being something that is the preserve of an exclusive elite. And the music itself is not what keeps people out. It's all of those cultural attitudes. And there are lots and lots of reasons why that is the case. They are cultural, they are educational, they're social, they're class related. But that's what I really want to break down. And so people say to me, oh, I'd love to get your book for my aunt who really loves classical music. And I want to say, but what about you? This could be, you know, a real gateway and entry for you into this incredible genre. It's not about making anyone feel stupid for the fact that they don't know how to pronounce a surname, or they've never heard of something, or they don't know the difference between the Romantic era or the Baroque era. Of course not. This is just about saying, come with me on this incredible sonic journey, and hopefully this might really enrich your life in ways that at the moment you just can't even believe might be possible.
That was Clemency Burton Hill, author of the book Year of Wonder, Classical Music to Enjoy Day by Day, which was published by Harper. Instead of our traditional outro music, we're listening to today's piece, which is January 4th, and that is, Lou?
This is Beethoven's String Quartet, number 13 in B-flat major, opus 130, number 5, cavatina.
Thank you for joining me, Lou.
Oh, thank you. This was fun.
And thank you for joining us for Marginalia. You can discover more episodes at kmuw.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Marginalia is produced at KMUW Wichita. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.